Be uplifted, be inspired. This is Step Forward and Volunteer.
Welcome to the latest episode of the popular Step Forward and Volunteer podcast, brought to you by Lions Clubs British Isles. My name is Samantha Boffin, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in. If you haven't listened before, our aim is simple. We want to celebrate the positive difference volunteering makes to communities across the British Isles and beyond. To do that, we'll be speaking to those who give up their time to help others, inspiring more people to step forward and volunteer. This month on the podcast, we're joined by Trish Sale. Trish is the Community Connections Coordinator for the Royal National Institute for the Blind in the southwest of England. Trish joins the podcast to talk about her own experience of living with sight loss, as she has an eye condition called uveitis, which affects the inside of the eye, originating in a part of the eye called the uvea. Trish is no stranger to adventures and, with her best friend Cathy Rowe, entered the Race Across the World, screened by the BBC in the spring of 2023. But first, I have a favour to ask. We would like your help in getting the word out about Step Forward and Volunteer. Tell your family, tell your friends, and if you're a Lions member, why not let other members of your club know about the podcast and how easy it is to listen? All you need to do is either go onto the website, www.lionsclubs.co, where you'll see a link to the podcast, or you can search for Step Forward and Volunteer on apps like Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. You can listen on demand or subscribe so that you never miss an episode. We publish a new programme each month, and we're really keen to spread the positivity and get as many people listening as we can. And today we are talking to Trish Sales from the RNIB, the Royal National Institute for the Blind, who earlier this year shared her inspiring personal story with Crediton and District Lions. Hello, Trish.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
I'm fine. So lovely to meet you. I wonder if you could tell the podcast listeners a little bit about yourself.
Hi, yeah. So my name's Trish. I work for the Royal National Institute for the Blind, as you said. I am severely sight impaired and have been since 2011. I am 25 years old times two, so just a little bit over 49. Originally from Wales, but now live in Devon. I've lived in Devon since 1999 and now live in Exeter and absolutely love it.
Oh, wow. So, Trish, would you mind telling us how you began to lose your eyesight and what that meant to you?
Yeah, so prior to 2011, I had full eyesight. So I had 20/20 vision, never had to wear glasses, never had a problem, got my sight tested regularly. And I was out walking with Cathy, just walking along the beachfront, and my right eye popped, but it didn't feel like a pain. It just sounded like an internal pop. It was really quite weird. And all of my sight went completely out of my right eye. So me being me, I literally buried my head in the sand, went back to her house. Her husband is a pharmacist and said, yeah, I think you need to go to the optician, but it could be that you just got sand in your eye or something like that. So it was a weekend. It was bank holiday weekend. So I waited till I got back to Exeter. I then carried on working for a week thinking, oh, it's fine, my sight will come back. Went to the optician, who sucked air and kind of did the, ooh, I'm not sure about this. You need to go up to the hospital. So off I went up to Exeter Hospital 2 days later, because he did say it was an emergency, so I left it 2 days. Went up there and they did literally the same. They went, it can't be what we think it is. So we need to send you to Moorfields.
All right.
I did the, am I dying here? Because they kind of didn't tell me anything. So off I go to Moorfields and they did a load of tests. They did some blood tests, poked and prodded me, as, you know, they all do. And they came back with a diagnosis of white dot syndrome or birdshot. They said, don't look it up because it will frighten you. But until we get everything back, we can't guarantee what it is. So in the meantime, I was just kind of on steroids and other immunosuppressants. And they got back to me about a month later saying, we've just had some of the bloods back from a place in America, because we weren't 100% sure. And it's this thing called chromioretinopathy uveitis.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. There's one in 750,000 people ever get it.
Wow. Okay.
And it's basically my immune system attacking my eyes, saying they don't belong to me anymore. Now, the rarity of it is because there's a lot of uveitis, but it's because it's this chromio bit. What they've said is that they've never seen anybody with it under the age of 70, and I was 40 at the time, and it never affects both eyes. So one, I'm an anomaly because I was under the age of 70. But they said, don't worry, we'll get some of your sight back. You know, you'll be able to drive, you'll be able to do everything. It's absolutely fine. Don't worry about it. So I carried on. Exactly 6 months later, I had exactly the same happen in my left eye.
No.
Yeah. And unfortunately, at that point, I was actually driving a car right at that second.
Trish.
Yeah. So my sister, who was in the car with me, I slammed on the brakes. She took over driving and we went straight up to Bristol Eye Hospital, because by then they'd said to go to Bristol rather than to London because it was easier for me. They put me on a load of antibiotics and IV steroids and this, that and the other. And they got some of my sight back in both eyes. But they said, this is very, very rare to see it in both eyes. And they don't really know still to this day why it's in both eyes. They don't know what happens to it because it's so rare, and because people is normally over the age of 70, people normally get cataracts or they get macular degeneration. And unfortunately, because of the age category, people tend to die with it. And so they don't really know what happens to it. So, yeah, that's kind of what happened.
That is an incredible story. I mean, and so completely out of the blue. Yes. I mean, no warning at all.
No. They said that I was born with this disease, but it had never presented itself. And they couldn't tell that I had it through any eye tests or anything, because it is my immune system just all of a sudden decided, we'll attack our eyes.
So it's not something that would have ever shown up anyway. It's not something anybody ever looks for in eye tests.
No, unfortunately not. And back when I was having my eye tests, they weren't doing things like eye pressures and things like that. I mean, now it's come a long, long way. So, you know, they are doing eye pressure and they are doing peripheral visions, and they're doing so much more now when you go to the optician. So they can pick up on things. Because they were saying that if I'd had a scan done at the back of my eyes, which they never used to do, they might have picked it up at that point. But they now do it as a given. It's one that they do. So I think now science has come a long way and has helped out a huge amount.
Yes, we're similar age, and I've been short-sighted all my life. Right. And you're right, the eye tests that I have now are vastly different from the ones that I had when I was younger, when I was a teenager, into my 20s and even my 30s.
Absolutely. I mean, you used to read off a screen and then see if you could see a balloon in the background. That's what it used to be. And now it's, so much more.
So am I right, Trish, the Royal National Institute for the Blind, they helped you enormously. They gave you your life back.
They absolutely did. So when I started losing my sight, I became very introvert. I wouldn't go out of the house. I became really anxious. Depression set in. And I became very isolated. I isolated myself to the extent that I wouldn't even go down to the shop because I was so scared that something was going to happen to me. And at this point, I still had about 70% left of my eyesight, so I still had quite a bit left, but I was the only person in the world that had sight loss as far as I was concerned, because I didn't know anybody with sight loss, because it was something that I never came across. So I don't know how to this day how it happened, but I got a knock on my door And this lady knocked on my door and said, "Hi, I'm from the RNIB. I've come to speak to you." And I went, "Okay." So she sat in my front room. And she told me all about her life, that she was a full-time mum. She was married to somebody with sight loss. She's got three very small children, or did have at the time, and she works full-time. And I thought, this woman's a superwoman. You know, how does she deal with that? I don't know. We sat for about an hour, something like that. And she said, "Can you show me where the shops are?" And I was like, "Well, it's down the road and take a right." She went, "I get lost in everything. Please, can you just show me?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't want to go out." Anyway, I did. I hung onto her leg like a little child hanging onto their mum's leg, going, "No, don't go." Anyway, we went down to the shop, and I'll never forget it. She said, "I need some tomato ketchup and something else." I picked up the tomato ketchup. We went and paid for it. And on the way back up the road, I said to her, "How are you getting home?" She said, "Oh, I've got a driver." "Well, that was posh. How did you get a driver?" She said, "I've got no sight whatsoever." She said, "I'm completely blind." And I thought, wow, this really is the blind leading the blind. But also, how on earth she can do that, full-time job, and look after three very small children and a husband that's sort of severely sight impaired and work. I thought, if she could do that with no sight whatsoever, I've got 70%, what am I thinking about? Yeah. I then got invited to a Living Well with Sight Loss course, or it was called Living with Sight Loss course then. And I went into this. It was a day each week for 4 weeks. And I went in and I spent the whole day crying. And I was bawling my eyes out. And the guy who was running it came up to me afterwards and said, "I'm so sorry we've upset you." I said, "No, you haven't. I'm not alone anymore." And it was just the relief and the knowing that there was help out there, and that, you know, I wasn't alone in this, and people understood it, was, it was like the world had just been lifted off my shoulder. And I was crying because I was just so happy not to be alone. I mean, without RNIB, I would not be here today.
Wow. I mean, they just do this incredible work. Yeah. It's can we turn now to this big adventure that you've just experienced with your best friend, Kathy? So, you entered for the BBC's Race Across the World.
Yes.
What made you do that?
The honest answer is I don't really know. I think I must have had one of those moments and thought, "Oh, this is going to be a good idea. Let's do it." But what it was, I watched Series 1 and Series 2 and absolutely loved it. At the end of Series 2, it said, "If you're interested, please apply here." So I thought, yeah, let's give it a go. Didn't think for 1 second, like I said, a menopausal middle-aged woman that lives in Devon would ever get on a program like that. Anyway, I applied. We did a 1 minute video, which is the first part of the application, and I'd actually said, "I'm crazy, I love traveling, and I'm going blind." I think that's all I really said.
There's a winner there, you know. That's incredible. So you got through all of the various, because there's a lot of hoops to jump through, isn't there, when you're getting on a program like that? You have to go for a lot of interviews and things.
Yeah, because they need to make sure, one, that they've got the right person, but two, that you're not criminally insane or something, you know.
So what was the adventure like? So this was traveling from the west coast of Canada to the east, I think, for those listeners that haven't tuned in to the third series yet. So what was it like? What did it entail? What did you do?
So we were given the same amount of money that it would cost for a one-way ticket from the east to the west for a flight, okay, which worked out to be about $4,000, which seems a huge amount of money. But actually, when you break it down, it worked out, because it was over 8 weeks, it worked out to be $1,000 a week. Mm-hmm. But you've got to pay for your food, your accommodation, and your travel in that. You cannot fly. So everything has to be done via foot, car, train, bus, or ferry, basically. So when we worked out that one bus ticket that was 4 hours was going to cost us $250 each, it was a little bit on the tight side. So during the west to the east, we had different checkpoints that we had to get to. You didn't have to get there first, but if you got there first, you then left first, which meant you had a bit of a lead on the other teams when it came to that. So we started doing some jobs in amongst kind of our weeks out on the race to supplement the travel. But also, you know, we did jobs that we ended up spending the night at theirs and having for bed and board, which meant that it didn't cost us anything to sleep at night and for food, or we would get travel or whatever. So that's kind of the crux of the race itself. There were four other teams, and we basically had to beat them to the end.
And were all the teams double acts, as it were? It was two people per team?
Yes. So we had a husband and wife, Zainab and Babin. We had two brothers, Mark and Michael. And then we had two lots of father and daughter. So we had Laddie and Monique, and then we had Kevin and Claudia. And then you had best mates, myself and Kathy.
Wow. And did you meet them all at the beginning? So did everybody kind of, was there a meeting point and then you all went your separate ways, as it were?
Yes. Yeah, so we all met at the start line. We were all then given an envelope saying, we're having your phone taken away from you, any GPS taken away from you, or any access to internet at all taken away. Here's your money. Oh, by the way, there's some bear spray just in case you encounter some bears.
No.
And then they gave you an envelope saying, you're going from Vancouver to St. John's in Newfoundland. And your first checkpoint is Tillel.
Wow.
Oh, and they gave us a map of Canada. The map of Canada, when he stood it up, was the same height as Kathy.
No.
We're trying to find a tiny little town called Tillel on this huge map was like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
Wow.
Took us forever to find it. And then we went to the start line and we met our competitors. So that's the first time we met each other. And everybody's like, do you know where Tillel is? And we're like, might do, might not, might do. So nobody's giving anything away. Myself and Kathy were the eldest of the group because the two father-daughters, the fathers were the same age as ourselves, but the daughters were 25 and 27. The brothers were 28 and 29. And Zainab and Mabeen, who are married, are mid-30s, late 30s.
You and Kathy, am I right in thinking you and Kathy actually won the race?
You are quite correct. Yes, we did. Spoiler alert! So, yes, we've done 16,000 kilometres with, like I said, very little money. It worked out to be something like £50 a day we had. Mm. And, yeah, we beat everybody to the finish line by 2 hours. So, yeah.
And how did that feel?
It was mad. It was absolutely crazy. And I still can't believe that we've done it, even now. But it's also a little bit sad because we'd had the most amazing adventure that's ever, ever happened and will ever happen to us. I think we made every single moment count. We absolutely loved every second of it. Yeah. But we were racing to finish it. And it was like the end of it. So it's a little bit sad. But, you know, the winning money, you know, £10,000 each, kind of made it a little bit better, you know, as it does.
Not bad at all. Wow. But yes, yeah, so you're right. It's almost like a bittersweet thing, isn't it? You're on the one hand, you need to win, so you need to go quickly. But on the other hand, you want to spend that time really soaking up this incredible moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I keep saying there's so many pinch me moments on the race. I mean, the highs were incredibly high. The lows were the worst thing that's ever happened in the world to anybody. So things like dropping a banana on the floor that was free was the worst thing in the world. Because it's like, oh no, we've got food. Oh no, we've just dropped it.
So are you planning any more adventures?
Yes. Myself and Kathy, Zainab and Mabeen, go to China and we're doing a 5-day trek on the Great Wall of China in aid of RNIB.
Wow, so you've got the bug now, basically.
Yes, most definitely. When we actually got back from Canada, myself and Kathy decided that we'd walk up the Inca Trail, which was another 5-day trek, to go and see Machu Picchu. So, yeah. And
wow.
I got up to the top and I was looking down at Machu Picchu and I phoned my old boss, because I used to work for a bank, and I went, I quit. And she went, sorry, I quit. And she's like, right, okay. So, yeah, I left because I just thought, you know, I want to do something different. So after volunteering for RNIB for 7 years prior to it, I got hold of them and I said, we got a job. And they went, we have actually. If you want to apply, there's a few. So I applied for a community connections coordinator and I got the job. Mm-hmm. So I actually now work for the Royal Marsden Institute.
Wow. I mean, so not only did they support you and turn your life around when you needed them.
Absolutely.
It's an incredible story. It's just wonderful, isn't it?
It is.
So going back to what happened to you, what would you say to people that have experienced something similar, a personal point in their life where, I don't know, something went terribly wrong like it did for you? What would you say to those people?
I would say, bear with it, learn from it, but don't forget it will get better. Don't feel it's getting better, reach out for help because there's help out there. It doesn't matter whether it's a sight loss thing, there is help out there. But reach out for it and ask for it. Don't suffer alone because you're not. And, you know, no matter how daft or how horrible you feel, there's somebody there that understands and sympathises and empathises with you. So reach out to it.
Amazing advice. Thank you. Thank you. So, Trish, have you got anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
Enjoy every day that you can. You've got one life. Like I said, right at the beginning of this, I kept myself in my house for 6 months. Now, although I don't regret doing it because I am where I am now, don't let life pass you by. Just grab it by the horns and just go for it. I've always said, I want to go into my grave regretting something I've done rather than regretting something I haven't done.
Well, on that note, I think we could leave that there. Trish, thank you so much for sharing, well, not just your incredible story, but all the adventures that you had since then and all your advice. That's so fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for coming onto the Step Forward and Volunteer podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sam. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
It's time now for a short break. We'll be back after this.
Never miss an episode of Step Forward and Volunteer. Listen via lionsclubs.co or subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts.
Lions Clubs support an extensive range of health and vision-oriented initiatives, locally, nationally, and internationally. For example, they help those living with sight loss by supporting talking books and newspapers, producing the audio Lion magazine and the Lion podcast that you're listening to right now, volunteering and befriending initiatives, recycling spectacles and hearing aids. Lions Clubs also act to prevent avoidable blindness through their healthy vision campaigns, sight restoration operations around the world, and early detection eye screening program. Well, that is all we have time for on this month's podcast. Don't forget, you can also listen to past editions of the Step Forward and Volunteer podcast anytime via www.lionsclubs.co or on Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. Thanks once again to our special guest, Trish Sale, and a big thank you to you, our listeners as well. Take care and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Step Forward and Volunteer. If you want to get involved in local community volunteering, visit www.lionsclubs.co to learn more.